Let's start another Design Studio conversation about presentation design and the business of presentation. Here are the show hosts, Troy Caller, Nolan Hams, and Sandra Johnson. Season 6, Episode 123.
Okay, presentation design listeners, we have another treat for everybody that's listening. Nolan, Sandy, and myself are at the Microsoft MVP Summit in Bellevue, Washington. We're just outside of Seattle, and we're attending an invite-only event. Scratch that. That is the intro I would have used if the Microsoft MVP Summit was not virtual this year in 2021. We have spent 3 days with Microsoft, all the meetings via Microsoft Teams, and lots of amazing discussions and hearing about the future of PowerPoint, and we're just missing the opportunity to gather in person. So what we have done is we've gathered a group of Microsoft MVPs for PowerPoint for this episode. This is basically the same as always, an open and free-flowing conversation among a group of PowerPoint experts, all awarded as MVPs by Microsoft for PowerPoint. And it's going to be fantastic, rambling, and hopefully will be insightful, inspiring, or humorous, depending on your take. On the count of three, I would love everybody that has joined us to say hello, presentation podcast listeners. And with that, let's talk. 3, 2, 1. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
We have to do that again.
No way. That is so perfect. We're going to pull some music and get started.
Okay, so let's get started. Let's start by going around our virtual tables and quickly getting a hello from each of you with the name, state you live in, and the number of years Microsoft has awarded you as an MVP. Let's see, who should we start with? Let's start with Rick.
Okay, I'm Rick Brett Snyder. I've officially been an MVP for 11 years now. And prior to that, I was involved with the MVP program for 5 or 6 years while I was still at Microsoft. And I live in California.
There you go. Okay. How about you, Mike?
I am Mike Parkinson. I live just outside of Washington, D.C., and I have tricked Microsoft into letting me be an MVP for 5 years.
Awesome. Nolan?
I had to look back at my award tree or thing, whatever that is. It's 8 years for me or thereabouts. I live in Montclair, New Jersey, which is about 30 minutes west of Manhattan, and you know who I am if you're listening to this.
Yeah.
So how about Julie?
Hi, Julie Terberg, and I'm in Michigan, and I've been lucky enough to be in part of this wonderful MVP group for 15 years.
Oh my goodness. How about Echo?
Hi, I'm Echo Swinford. I live in Indiana, and Microsoft has been putting up with me since 2000.
Oh my gosh.
I am like 20 years, you guys. I'm the oldest one, or like the most senior on this call. And I feel
21
really
Echo.
Is it 21? I can't even add.
Steve Rinsberg, who's not here with us, he's the only one longer than any of us, mm-hmm. isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely our senior old man.
Richard, how about you?
And I'm the junior of the group. My name is Richard Goring. I live in Boston, Massachusetts, and I was thrilled to be invited into this wonderful group in 2019.
We're so glad to have you. Troy?
Ooh, yeah. Heather? Heather?
Yeah.
Wait, do we hear Heather?
I'm Heather Ackman, speaking to you from Illinois, and I have been an MVP since 2011. So what is that, 9, 10 years?
But you haven't always been a PowerPoint MVP, have you?
No, ooh, no, I haven't.
Twist.
No, I haven't. I started out as an Office System MVP. And then,
whatever that
yeah.
is.
And then they did away with that designation and they made me choose and I didn't choose. And then they just designated me PowerPoint. So,
well, welcome. Yeah. We're glad you're here.
Appreciate. Okay. My name is Troy Caller. I live in Southern California and I'm doing math here and I'm kind of debating if Julie was right, because according to my math, I've been an MVP. This is my 18th year, but I know Julie was an MVP before I was.
Nope.
So
year after.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Then this must be okay. Uh-huh. Anyways, I've been around for a long time. Julie's been around. We've gotten to bother and listen to Microsoft all at the same time. It's a privilege. I really like it. Okay, let me kick us off with a question because we've just gotten done.
Hey.
Wait, did we forget somebody?
Yeah, we forgot me.
How about if we forgot you? Yeah. Sandy, please.
Okay.
Sandy, who are you and what are you doing here?
Yeah. What am I doing here? Well, as you all know,
I
say every single recording that I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I was awarded the MVP award in 2008, which is kind of weird because I think I've only been an MVP for PowerPoint for 12 years.
Wait, that math checks out.
Does it check out?
Well, it's 2021, so this would be the 13th year.
Well, I have
we're
two
all acknowledging
numbers.
That 2020 never existed, right?
Right, 2020. Right.
That's the issue.
Yeah.
She can't math either, so it's all good.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
We're not. We don't know anything about Excel or anything.
I know, right? Stuff. Yeah, we're not Excel MVPs. Damn.
Well, we need a formula to figure it out then, and it would have been accurate if we had done that. Okay, here's the deal. We have spent 3 days being in discussion rooms with Microsoft, and it is a true privilege to do that. Now, with that, we have to also acknowledge that we are under an NDA, so we cannot talk about most anything we talked about for the past 3 days. So this is an interesting conversation. This is a, hi, let's talk about what we know, but let's not talk about what we can talk about. So with that, I had this great idea. I wanted to talk about what are the big themes for Microsoft kind of Office, I would say, that we've seen this year. What do you identify as Microsoft's big themes? And I'll give you the spoiler. Then we're going to ask what you've seen from your clients and what actual work you're doing as your big themes. Are they aligning like right now in this point in time? So like with Microsoft, I'm just going to say they have a huge emphasis on web everything. You know, Teams is web-based. PowerPoint Online is web-based. What do you guys say?
Yeah.
Designer, everything.
Designer. Everything.
Okay. Artificial intelligence. Maybe that's the way to say that.
Yeah. Collaboration. A lot of collaboration. And that dovetails with the web stuff.
Teams.
Which isn't a surprise, which is an NDA because, you know, Ignite, they talked about Weatherman. So it's all Teams stuff.
Yeah.
All Teams, all the time.
There's a great one. If you're listening now and you don't go to Ignite, like I didn't, just type in Microsoft Weather Person, I think they called it.
Yeah. Okay.
Weather Person.
Did I say
and that's
Weatherman?
A great,
sorry.
Great, great, like insight into some new stuff coming. But that was mind blowing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Other big themes? They haven't done much on their, I mean, from an organizational standpoint, Rick B, maybe you could chime in. I haven't seen a whole lot of shakeup on their organizational. They've stayed very consistent and very focused on development and not on like rebuilding the company or reorganizing the company.
Yeah, it's interesting.
From my perspective,
my take on it with no actual information behind it is that there is a lot more ownership in the PowerPoint team and less is being spread out to shared teams. So that's always good news for PowerPoint.
I guess so. But at the same time, it does seem like they're, I mean, in a way, I'd almost say the opposite, because like with the inclusion of Teams and it seems like they're trying to have like OneDrive and collaboration.
Yeah,
it seems like they're trying to get everyone to play in the
sandbox. The PowerPoint
team's
much more involved in that. And it used to be shared teams would just take something, own it.
Yeah.
And when they were about a third of the way through, then they'd tell PowerPoint and the PowerPoint team what was going on. And we'd go, oh my God, what have you done?
Yeah. Another thing that I've seen that can sometimes get a bit lost in all the AI and collaboration is the content. They are trying really hard to help people do a really good job. You know, this last year, we've seen so many images and illustrations and videos all in PowerPoint now.
You know, and even in the icon space. Now we don't have to go outside of PowerPoint for you know, some simple icons. There's a great library in there.
I've also been noticing more third-party, not a ton, but more and more third-party stock sites having their little API helper thing so you can get their imagery from within PowerPoint without ever having to go to the website.
Hey, another theme I think was really big is accessibility.
Yes. Yeah, it is.
Across Microsoft, period, but really, really in PowerPoint.
Wait, quick roll call, because I think who's on this? I think everybody does client work here. Has anybody how many people have had at least one request for a project that involves accessibility being a focus or a key attribute of the project within the last, you know, 6 to 8
not
six,
for 15
months?
Years.
Not, yes. Not recently.
And, really?
And I've actually pitched it to my clients. I sent out an email. I said, you know, Microsoft PowerPoint is doing these amazing things with accessibility. You can do this. I gave them some examples. And I said, if you want to be accessible to your audiences, why don't you give me a call?
Has anybody else? Anybody?
I've had one request.
One.
Yeah,
okay.
I've had a few.
And is it mostly like government or education?
No, but we have it a lot as a company because we do a lot of e-learning content and training content. Mm-hmm. And we build a lot of it in PowerPoint, and people like that because of the editability functions. But for an actual presentation, I think maybe one in the last year. Certainly not very many.
Yeah.
Okay, this is totally separate from what I thought I was going to hear, because we've had...
Well, just to flip it then, but also when we tell people about it and say, no, we're not going to do something because of accessibility reasons, they buy into it. So we don't get many requests, but when you educate people to contrast Sandy's experience, people are generally open to it.
Exactly. They're very open to it, but I'm constantly advocating for accessibility, and they usually don't request it, but once I bring it up, they're like, oh yeah, that. I forgot about that.
Interesting.
But even if Julie,
I'm sorry, I'm going to jump in there. Echo or Julie, like template or project work for you guys, accessibility?
Echo,
anything?
Yeah, I've had a couple of clients over the years who hire me specifically to do accessible templates. I haven't had any specific requests for that in, I don't know, probably a year, but it's... Mm. Ironically enough, either education clients, which is normal, but Canadian financial clients, especially, that's the accessibility thing is a huge thing for them. They have to legally, by law, make their stuff accessible. So they do.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot as well.
Well, that's the same here too.
I know, but they take it more seriously is what I think happens.
Yeah.
Small government, bigger authoritative voice. I was going to say, I really thought everybody was going to say yes. We've had two projects, one in the last week and one, I don't know, 3-4 months ago that were very, very focused on the accessibility thing. So I was kind of thinking,
well, that's
cool. I thought we'd hear a rise in it.
I do it in InDesign and PDF more.
Any type of project. More than PowerPoint, any type of project I'm kind of curious about, because I mean, there's the whole, DIB, you know, the diversity, inclusion, belonging is like a big topic.
Yes, right.
Yeah. And I'm just kind of surprised it isn't coming out more, because some of the tools and features that is in PowerPoint is like unbelievable.
Yes. Well, I think,
for this whole accessibility.
Honestly, I think it's on us to help advocate for that, like Heather was saying. And so when I create templates, because, you know, that's what I do, I go through and I make the stuff as accessible as it can be. And I guess what I'm doing is, honestly, I'm just adding alt text and checking Z order and doing some simple things, marking things as decorative so that it doesn't interfere if someone who needs a screen reader really is using it. So I guess I don't go full blown in, I want to make an accessible template, but I do put some effort into making sure that the templates I build are accessible. How's that? Does that make sense?
That is awesome.
I actually think it's a UI problem in PowerPoint that it's the accessibility checker is a great feature. It's in the review tab, and review is double duty. It's review of collaboration and review of the document. So people aren't seeing it. They don't know it can do it. They don't think about it.
It's on the info tab.
I'd love to see it move to the design tab.
Or home even.
Ooh.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, so it's not an afterthought.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we have a design gallery that's about, you know, 5-10 slide squares long and could be, you know, chopped down to nothing if I had my way.
Well, you know, since we can't build variants at all because they break, why don't they just lose all the variants, lose the variants tab, and there, you got room for more?
Yep. Clap hands. I'm doing the clap hands icon.
Yeah.
You can't get rid of the variants tab because then there's no way to successfully hide the useful stuff like colors and fonts.
You know, it's so frustrating because, like, they had such high hopes for these whole, you know, themes. Yes. And the what did Howard call it? How he called it? Like the magical change machine thing where you can mix and match and do all your stuff. Nobody does that shit. Are you kidding me?
And there's so much potential. There's so many options there. Every time I look at it, it's like, oh, you know, the idea of mixing and matching a 4x3 and a 16x9 in one template. Hey, if folks don't know that, that is a goal or a benchmark that never was achieved. Yeah, there's so many things there. Okay, big themes for Microsoft. We've got a lot out there. What have we seen from our clients? Like, what, like when you're doing work, what are your big things? And actually, I'll start with Heather, because Heather kind of comes at us from a different perspective a lot of times. And every time she says something, I'm like, that is an amazing thing to think about.
So wait, what was the question?
Like, what are the big themes you've had for presentation PowerPoint uses throughout the past year?
Oh my goodness. Why you start with me? Okay. So in the past year, I've been focused on graduate school. So for the themes that I see in the past year, I've seen a lot of people trying to make presentations work in Zoom and not Teams, which I'm sure is what Microsoft wants to see happen, which is really strange because my university has Teams. No one uses Teams there.
Oh, that's funny.
I don't think it's funny. So
that's ironic. There's the word.
Ironic. Yeah. So we do a lot of group work in the HCI program. So for one of my groups, I managed to convince them to use Teams. So we did use Teams a lot for that collaboration. And we actually ended up ditching using like PowerPoint in like on the web, just because we had so many issues with it in Teams and trying to collaborate there. And we actually end up throwing the PowerPoint deck into like a Google Drive. And it was sad. It was like, I want to like cheer them on and be like, Microsoft is awesome here and use it in Teams. Yay. But it wasn't a great experience for us. So that was sad. But, you know, we were able to get the work done, just not in Teams. So that was sad. Yeah. Okay. I'm sure that's really not what they want to hear. But
Teams, no. I mean, Teams all year has been huge for me. I am less on the Zoom and more on the Teams because I think it's because I have enterprise clients over and over again. Anybody else seeing a Teams kind of theme or the whole online thing? Duh. That's a dumb question.
It's not a dumb question.
It's an obvious question.
Well, you know what, though, Sandy? You and I met on your Teams to discuss that project.
That's
and
right.
Then I went to get on to the Microsoft monthly call and couldn't because I was tied to your team.
Oh,
and
no.
I was so pissed.
Really?
Yeah, that's why I couldn't get on. I was so mad. And I get frustrated with Teams. So, you know, the
you
fact
and
that
Nolan.
Heather,
I mean, I know there are more. Yeah. It's not just you doing the work. Okay.
Mike,
yeah.
Jim
Ford. It's frustrating.
Yeah. I know.
Well,
Heather was just saying about trying to use Teams and then doing the collaboration and all of that and giving up and having to move to Google Drive. So I've been experiencing this year, my clients are asking for Google Slides templates. And it makes my heart hurt because they suck. They're so hard. I mean, like I'm putting a premium price on Google Slides templates
They're
difficult. So I'm going to start upcharging on that because it takes so much more time. But what I keep saying,
they're not paying for the software. They'll pay for Echo.
Yeah, there you go.
They'll pay one way or the other.
One way or the other, it's going to cost. No, the frustrating part for me though, is that I think that it's not just PowerPoint. Like PowerPoint, they can add all of these great features. And even if they, you know, if the collaboration is better or whatever, the sharing and all of that. In my opinion, part of the issue is that they're tied to that SharePoint ecosystem and the Teams ecosystem and all of that. And that is a lot harder to use, I think, than Drive. And so I think that they have a strike against them from the outset. That's kind of where my head is. And I have a hard time articulating that, but that's my gut feeling. It's not that people hate PowerPoint and love Google Slides. It's that they prefer that Google Drive ecosystem because it's easier for them to share and collaborate in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's easier for people to comprehend and understand that's and use. Mm-hmm.
Well, they definitely don't have the feature-rich
I can't find anything
software.
In Google.
we're not used to the software, but they definitely have a head start on the whole collaboration and ease of use for the everyday person. I think Steve Rinsberg today or yesterday made a great statement in one of the sessions. He's like, and we were talking specifically about Teams and collaboration. He's like, it works perfect if that's your world.
Yes.
And if it's not, you don't want to be there.
Yeah.
You know? And that's, he said it much better than that.
But I think as MVPs, we need to realize, you know, a lot of us are in our own businesses. And when the enterprise world is a lot different than what we do, and understanding the whole Teams, the whole OneDrive, the whole SharePoint environment is really, really important.
Very true.
And I say it like they're like somebody else in the world, other beings. I think the enterprise people really enjoy it. Just that's the experience I'm having lately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think because of its simplicity or lack of features, that's an advantage because you can't do very much. But what you can do, you can find easily and do it, as opposed to it being hidden in loads of submenus. And the collaboration is, unfortunately, like just a long way ahead. And I wish that other platforms, you know, whether it's Dropbox or SharePoint or Box or whatever it is, were just up there with that amazing integration that Drive and the G Suite has.
When does the collaboration and also, there's some,
oh, go ahead. Yeah, there's some other interesting features though. Like there's a fantastic thing called Audience Q&A in Google Slides where you can have people ask questions as part of it. And that's not something that you can realistically do in PowerPoint because it's in so many different endpoints. And that's
what is
we're
that?
Trying to
I'm sorry. I don't know what that is.
You can take audience questions and present them. I think it's called Audience Q&A.
But it's like audience interaction, right? Where the audience isn't actually speaking, but they can type in their question and it shows up on the slide dynamically.
Yeah. And there's things like that that go, like for all of us as content creators, you know, maybe not so great, but again, in that enterprise environment, really quick, really easy to do my base level slides. And then I can also, you know, share them and use them and have these funky tools. So I can see the advantage. I can see why people are drawn to it as much as it's annoying to create the kind of stuff that you want.
Okay, Rick, take us in a different course. I'm just calling out somebody now.
So first off, the number of people who are backed too many versions to be useful has really dropped for me. Subscriptions are way up, even in government work. I'm finding more people are up to date. Education is still horrible, but the number of people who are up to date and even sometimes on the advanced releases is amazing. I wouldn't have expected it.
Rick, I agree with you. And it's gotten to the point where I usually forget to ask. And then, of course, it bit me in the butt. Same. I had a client on 2010.
Ooh, last month,
but they swear they're
my father-in-law's on 2010.
Anyway, on a counterpoint, the whole virtual meetings, I think, has made people a lot more relaxed and sloppy in presenting. And I give you one specific, people are using PowerPoint in the editor mode a lot more and as like a virtual whiteboard during meetings. And everyone understands how hard it is to present, how hard it is to get the deck up there so everyone can see it. And they're having trouble enough just talking to each other, much less getting media up on the screen. But I'm seeing so many people just not really bothering. It's almost like, you know, their presentation is in sweats too, you know, that
There's a cartoon waiting to happen.
It's just a matter of I think not fatigue, but relaxation and understanding that, hey, we're all in a crazy time right now. Let's not overdo it. The whiteboarding stuff is definitely, I'm seeing that all the time. And I try and tell people you can do that in the regular presentation too, but then they say, no, it's too much of a bother. I'm just going to do it this way. It works. It works part is really strong now.
Yep.
Presentation wearing sweats.
Well, I like that. I want to see that illustration.
I think it's a template waiting to happen, visual. The design.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, going on that statement, is there anything I'm trying to think? I've actually got two things I could say. What are some big and specifically maybe funny takeaways from the summit of 3 days and sitting in sessions with Microsoft people and other PowerPoint and industry people? I've got a great one here. I'm going to lead this off. Mm-hmm. Ready for this? Sandy Johnson.
Yes.
Made a comment which was not interpreted by our international presenters.
I know.
And I had to chime in because I got it. I mean, it was all about, it might have been the accessibility, but it was about picking up your voice.
No.
She made a note about her Minnesota accent.
It was coach.
That made no sense to, oh, yes. I was like, that is Midwest humor at its best from the Midwest. Or queen, come on.
No, they called on me like it was a real comment, and I
felt it was awesome.
No, I'm sorry, I was trying to be funny.
And then she answered with a Minnesota accent, and that even got further off course.
Yeah,
okay. Who else heard something?
I have
funnier?
To say something because, you know, I know these folks work hard to deliver these presentations to us, but I just expect. I always expect more because it's coming from the PowerPoint team. And there are little things that all of the presenters, and not just the MVP Summit, but all presenters, little nuances to make their presentations better from just a simple readability standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And those kind of things, I'm just sitting there itching to get a hold of their slides and just like strip them down and get rid of a bunch of stuff and clean them up. So to me, that's kind of like, I do that every time I sit through a presentation, but doing it 3 days in a row, I'm sitting, my nails are gone. Yeah. No, I'm kidding.
Things from the line spacing to the character spacing to, yes, exactly. Just those little things that if they were working from a template, that
they were
well built.
See, that's the whole thing. I want to know who's building these templates that they're using.
Yes.
Anyway, that's enough about that. But
it was nice to see too that that they have the same challenges that we do when they present. Sometimes things act a little wonky, and they demonstrated how you roll with it and address it in future releases. So that was, to know that they experience users' pain themselves by using the product every day, like users have to, was. Little tiny bit funny, a little tiny bit rewarding for me as a user who gets frustrated at times, but it also makes me feel good to know that they put themselves in the hot seat and can empathize when users say, gosh darn it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think these sessions are invaluable because everybody that's a PowerPoint PM, a developer stage, or, they're doing something with it. They live in such a perfect bubble where they're on the same team's tenant. They're on, they have great internet and they have, their stuff works. And to suddenly get into an environment where they've got to kind of interact with the world and they see when things don't, I think it's an amazing aha moment we heard over and over and over, like, oh, wait, that is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, firsthand experience is invaluable. And I don't think that they get that opportunity to see when things fail and to have it fail when their coworkers are trying to present is just invaluable for this event. I mean, that's probably a good reason to have this whole thing just happen, just so they can have to present in a real world and see where things,
anyways, compared to last year when COVID hit and all of a sudden Teams was on stage front and center,
it worked really, really well. I think last year went really well. This year was way more glitchy. It was crazy. I agree with you.
What was said earlier about presentations and sweatpants, thanks to Rick, maybe they too got a little comfy with everything. And they were like, well, it always works here. It'll work there.
Now, well, I thought we were being like guinea pigs, actually.
No, I think the more ingredients they add to the soup, the more it gets messed up.
Yeah.
I kind of enjoyed it, though, because, like, so all of them are mean really streak? Passionate. Really? No. Not from that. Not technical glitches, obviously. But yeah, to Troy's point, like learning from it. But the almost informality of it, because last year it was, we've got 50-minute sessions. Let's do 45 minutes of solid content. And like, you know, this group, you spend 3 hours talking about one topic. And so it felt like there was a lot less focus on, I have to present for a solid 45 minutes and more. Let's have a chat. Let's have a discussion. Let's show you what we're thinking. Let's get your feedback. Let's get different kind of viewpoints on it. And to me, that felt really good. And it wasn't quite so hard work. It wasn't quite so kind of difficult to get through it. And then you see the passion that they have for it and the fact that they really care and really want to do cool stuff with it. And that was really insightful.
The right people were in the room when all this went down too.
Absolutely. Well, so should we move on, Troy, to the next topic?
Oh, somebody's got to mention the thing about the raise hand in Teams, because it's like the new favorite phrase, but I don't want to be the guy saying everything.
Raise hand?
Oh, yeah.
So,
what,
that we never put our hands down?
That's the moderator thing. They need to assign a moderator, and their job is to monitor that and make sure it gets done. That's a meeting organizational thing. But all of a sudden, when somebody hadn't left their hand down, they had this great phrase that came
new
out.
New term. Go ahead, Troy.
I can't say it. Somebody else has got to. I can't
say it
at all.
I don't remember this.
Legacy
term.
Hand.
Oh, yeah.
Called the legacy hand.
That was Steve, wasn't it?
I don't know. It was hysterical.
I said that.
And then it became like the phrase to use. Oh, we can't talk. That's a legacy hand. That one should. We don't have to. They don't have a question. It was
like a canonized hand or something.
I want to put that in a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Next year we should all show up at Summit with a
legacy hand. Yeah. Exactly. With a little icon on there.
That'd don't kill awesome. Steve, because he'll make the damn t-shirts.
was it Steve or Amit that said it? I thought it was Steve as well, but I could be wrong.
Oh. Yeah.
I think Steve said it first, but then like Amit said it, and then a whole bunch of the Microsoft people started saying it. It became a thing.
It will. We just changed the trajectory of that phrasing for the entire company.
You've all heard it here first.
Yeah,
this is
exactly.
Where it's from the PowerPoint group, and it's going to go company-wide.
Try and influence new names for the duplicates they keep coming up with. Teams on Teams.
Oh, yeah.
Teams on Teams. Teams on PowerPoint Live versus Live PowerPoint.
Versus.
But don't you think that if the Teams interface were a little bit better, then that whole issue with legacy hand wouldn't be an issue?
I think that's a meeting organizational thing. For me, that was just killing me because that's that's what we do is virtual events now. So we have checklists of things. Okay, somebody's going to take care of this, and this is the way you're going to do it. And it's like, oh, nobody's driving this ship here. There's so many things happening, and
they should hire kind of
you. Yeah, you need to be hired to do that.
Yeah, this one's okay. So here's the thing. Let me ask you all a question. This is totally off the anything we had thought about saying. So how did you guys feel? You know, we had an email or some sort of way of getting a link. You would open up the link. It would say, open up this team event, and then we drop into the team event. We'd all be together, and at the end, you had to click leave. Like that's kind of a disappointing thing.
That's the stupidest thing ever.
And then you got to like kind of repeat. Did anybody feel like there's not really a connection? There's no visual connection. There's no continuity outside the fact you're going to go talk to another group by basically joining another thing. Does anybody feel disconnected by the whole process?
Yeah. I just wanted a PowerPoint room, a PowerPoint team, and then we could all keep coming in and out of it.
I agree with you. That would have been so much better.
Just like the real world.
Troy, that's also like a lot of the online conference experiences we've been having, right? Where you've got little sessions and you always have to leave and go back. And I mean, granted, this was the same group, but I mean, that's also something I don't think has quite been necessarily solved in the online conference world.
Thank you, everybody, for validating. I mean, we've built our entire, basically, the shift of our whole business. The pivot has been, we will create a synergy, a central meeting part. I mean, we have events for Teams and Zoom where you literally log into at least an experience. First of all, it's a login. And then you've got this continuity feel to everything. There's a centralized place. We have discussion rooms where people can just drop in and chat in between sessions. And I just felt it was so missing on this one. It's just an observation.
I do wonder whether VR and a VR world is the answer to this. And a bunch of us tried that with AltSpace VR. And you can access it through a computer. You can access it through headsets. And the Oculus Quest 2 is $300 now. It's just the prices are coming down so rapidly. And then you can move around and you can chat and you can have spatial audio where you're speaking to the people next to you without interrupting those that are presenting. And it felt like it's... It has huge potential. But
so, Richard, we all know that you own an Oculus because we saw it dozens of times. Who else owns any 3D environment
I do.
Goggle?
I
you do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wait, names. Who is that?
Sandy.
Rick.
Sandy? Oh.
Your okay. partner.
Yeah. Actually, Richard. And Rick. That's it?
Mm-hmm.
Heather? Your kids have to own something.
No, we have not jumped on that bandwagon a long time.
Huh?
Yeah, like... Yeah,
I don't. Yeah. I don't. I'm don't. Just curious.
It's been on our wish list though for a while, and yeah,
it just still seems so gimmicky to me.
Did you see the big news today? Microsoft landed a $22 billion contract with the Pentagon to Ooh. Develop a HoloLens for over the next 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. That's
like a lifetime of three different technologies yeah. right there in 10 years at this point. Wow, that's amazing.
But I mean, that's surely where it's got to go, because the problem with the headsets at the moment is that you are completely away from the real world. And it's very yeah. disconcerting, and it's heavy and it's uncomfortable and the battery life isn't great. The moment you can go to mixed reality with a HoloLens, it just becomes so much easier, and people will be so much more accepting of it. But at the moment, it's $3,000 as opposed to $300.
Is it really?
Yeah. Beyond,
yeah.
But we've just bought Quests for everyone, and it's mostly to kind of try it out and have fun, and everyone is stuck at home and we can't meet each other. But we have been doing meetings where you are able to chat with people in a much more social way.
Richard, you know, it's just a matter of the software, because the Quest 2 is able to give you a black and white view of reality through its cameras.
Yes, but it's not brilliant.
But it does help.
Yeah, so maybe they do it with cameras. Maybe they have it as the HoloLens does, with kind of a yeah. projected screen. But yeah, something like that, where it is mixed reality as opposed to all virtual.
And
yeah.
You said the Oculus Quest is $300?
No. Yeah, the Quest 2.
The Quest 2, I paid a little bit more. I ended up buying a special cord, and which I'm not going to use. I'll be sending it back. But I think I paid closer to $400 or $500.
Yeah, it is.
Maybe I just didn't shop around enough.
There are two models of the Quest 2. They have different amounts of memory. And then if you, I highly recommend, if you get a Quest 2, to get the advanced headgear and the second battery, because it balances the whole thing out. I used to be able to get, I got headaches after about 30 minutes. They're gone now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Really? Wow. Well, and I know the big deal, this is a total aside here, is that now the Oculus requires a Facebook account.
It always did.
You know, it's tied to your Facebook account now.
And if anyone is new to this podcast, you should absolutely go back in the archive from, what was it, November, December, speaking with Yulia Barnikova, and whole episode on exactly that, which is brilliant.
Absolutely.
So listen to that if you're interested in this kind of thing.
Okay, wait. Heather just came up with a great one here. I'm looking at our chat all of a sudden. Buzzwords that were brought up during the conference. Now, I gotta preface this, because I have flashbacks almost in a negative way. We used to play corporate buzzword bingo on comm. You know, we're sitting at a conference for 4 days listening to an industry and people we've never heard from before. And we would literally start making, you know, okay, that word's been said, you know, time. I work a lot with a lot of game and toy companies. So toyetic was a great one. I remember when it came out, but this is a long time. We're like, there's a word I've never heard before. Is that even in the dictionary? What were some of the buzzwords this week?
What does that mean?
Yeah, toyetic.
It means, toyetic means, it's a phrase that would say something is playful and fun, even if it's a collectible item. You know, it could be your, you know, is your iPod AirPod case a fun, playful thing? It'd be toyetic. I don't know.
Oh my god!
Is it an adjective? Like, is that?
Well, it's a. So, give us a word from this week, Heather, because I know you just listed one. I think it's great.
Like, well, democratizing. Like, that's one. Yeah.
That was one they said over and over again.
Major buzzword for this. And that would meet the corporate bingo This is a buzzword for this event.
And
this
that
company.
One has like this special cringeworthy place in my heart. I used to work for a company that loved that buzzword and no one in the company knew what that meant.
Oh, that's funny.
At all. But well, it would come up in every meeting that we had and no one could define it. Like
it's leveling the playing field. So democratizing in design means anyone can be a designer in PowerPoint. That's what they want. So that's what designer is all about.
That's what they were talking about?
Absolutely. And I don't mean, oh, that's funny.
Heather!
Oh, that's what they meant?
That's funny.
I've got one. So from the keynote, there was a discussion about education and that education was more about skills now, and that they kept on using the word skilling. It was like that scene from Mean Girls where they're trying to make fetch happen, you know? I looked it up on the internet. Yeah. I could find no other use of the term. There are a lot of guys named Skilling, but not...
So what does it mean again?
It means to, in like training or learning... And now it's skilling.
Okay.
There was a word that they said that meant something about growing, evolving, moving forward. And I can't remember the term. And I thought it was a bit clever, but it would definitely fit in this category. And for the life of me, I can't remember what they said. I think it was in the keynote as well.
Oh, okay.
Allyship.
Is that a word?
Was that how you pronounce it?
I heard that once. And
what does that mean?
I have no idea.
It's, you know what an ally is, right? So it's being an ally to everyone in the group.
I can't hear any word that combines with the ship and think Bodie McBoakface. Bodie or
that was a big one for me because I had never heard it, and that literally made me think. And when you and I went and you know I went and just went out to the web and I'm like, what is this? The one sentence description was being a good ally means showing up for others through actions, awareness, and empathy. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Why couldn't they just say be a good person? You know,
I've
it was
never
like a new
heard
word.
That
I,
word used before.
Yeah, there was a couple others. Anyways, corporate buzzword bingo is still exists in the virtual world.
It exists everywhere. It's a neologism. They just make up words as it fits, and it's the right person says it, and it sticks.
You know what would happen if you took all these buzzwords, used them in a presentation, and ran it through Presenter Coach?
funny! And then
we gotta try that.
Send it to someone.
You know what? Presentation Coach does not have. It doesn't have jargon, does it?
Yes,
I think it does.
It does.
I
had asked. I had had a conversation with the team that we heard from talking about Presenter Coach, and one of my big things was. It along the lines of jargon, but you need a company lingo or nomenclature to know it's an okay word or if they're pronouncing it right. Like think drug names. Like, did that presenter present it right? Could we put in our own special library was something I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't happen yet, by the way, folks, but you know, they got a lot of really cool stuff. That tool is one of the few tools I said, this is the most non-useful thing. Why are we investing money here? And I'm pretty darn impressed with it now after seeing what's forthcoming. Okay, with all the new feature, Rick, you've got to agree. I mean, after literally being with Microsoft so long, they let you retire. I don't think anybody gets to actually do that. They just kind of get to move. Like, can you say that this is the largest rollout of features in history? I mean, over the course of the past 3 years, I would say.
Troy, I was thinking about this last night, and it's. When I left Microsoft, it was 3 years between releases.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I moved on to another company for about a year that was doing much faster paced releases, like once every 2 months. And I kept on thinking at that time, how would Microsoft implement this kind of fast cadence? And they've done it. And it just has to do with a lot of courage and the ability to take the risks. We all get the pre-release. There's two levels of pre-release and then a stable version. And everyone I know is at least on one or the other of the pre-release versions. But just the fact that they have teamed up, the PowerPoint program manager team is like three or four times larger than it was when I was there.
Oh, that's interesting. Ooh. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Easily three or four times larger.
It's also a different mindset, though, don't you think, Rick? I mean, a lot of companies are operating on this agile. Yes.
Agile. Yeah, yep, that's exactly. The development.
And what it means is half-baked. And we
I was trying not to be geeky, Sandy. Thanks for taking us there.
You get it out there before it might work. It might work, yeah, but it might not.
It's very much a younger generation attitude that is driven off the web. Web development has always been that way. Rolling out, it's almost insidious that. Mm-hmm. Users will be test subjects without knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Well, but there's so much good that comes from that too, that instead of 3 years, it's every couple of weeks.
Right.
And so you deal with the bumps and everything. Of course, you know, also part of this was all determined by revenue, right? Increasing revenue through subscription and all that stuff. And that, and I'm sure that now they have to back it up with, you know, you got to give somebody something if they're paying every month or year for it.
Makes you want to be a subscriber. And that's the other thing. Their push is to get everybody to incentivize people to be subscribers. And I've said this in some of my training, and I hope it doesn't get me in trouble with Microsoft. They said, why? And I said, well, you know, for the good reason that you can have your software evolve quicker. But from the standpoint of a business owner, the valuation goes up. So if you have a subscription-based mm-hmm. business, you're looking at 4 to 6 times revenue versus 1 to 2 times revenue.
It also cuts support costs because you don't have to be supporting as many different versions. You still have some, but the bulk of it is usually up to date.
So that would mean it should be superior support and documentation.
Don't go crazy, right?
Well, I have to say that as frustrated as I get with things that break and all of that in the two rings that are not always baked, that are kind of half baked.
Yeah.
I mean, I get frustrated when things are broken, but I'm always surprised that there are not more things broken, right. To be honest. Like I'm kind of impressed that usually it's not usually showstopper bugs. You'll get little things and they're annoying and they're irritating when you're training. And I hate it that they keep moving stuff around and doing A/B testing, and
But they are responding so quickly.
That's right. That's the other benefit.
Yeah, they may not fix something that broke 10 years ago, but they'll fix something that broke last week. Right?
Yeah, that's true.
That's where it was kind of lead to. When I started with Rick, I was going to literally talk. I was going to bring it back to Rick. When you were there, this was a problem. Still a problem. What happened?
They fixed that bug from yesterday. Lost.
I blame the MVPs. Actually,
why? Why?
Demanding enough?
I'm just kidding. Too many complaints.
No, you're talking about the fact that. We have a long history with Microsoft and there are a lot of things that they just haven't attended to.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah. There's a definite almost incentive to get new things put in place, but there's no incentive to get things that really bother literally millions of users per day.
Do you want me to be dark? Or do you want me to be honest?
Will they ever get fixed?
No, nobody gets promoted for fixing a legacy bug.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like footers
for years. Yeah.
They just get promoted for brand new features that change the world.
Awesome. Well, flowers.
Somebody just get a job there just to fix a legacy thing and get fired.
There you go. They're all chasing the hero features.
I like the flowers idea though.
Yeah, give it a shot. I'll pitch it.
No, little Harry and David. Wine of the month club to the first person who can fix this legacy bug.
Oh, we're not getting to do any wine tasting this.
Oh,
no.
Oh, yeah. Speak for yourself.
Yeah, I'm finished mine.
Next year, Rick, we'll bring something special.
Okay, what else can we talk about? We got to wrap this up with just a couple of more things. I got a question. Actually, this is a question.
Oh.
PowerPoint templates. I would say didn't get a whole lot of love or even mentioned during the past 3 days because they were focused on new features and stuff. Do you guys see people more knowledgeable of what a real template is and requesting them or just kind of going with the Google slides? It's okay to have a bunch of random Echo? Stuff.
Julie, Echo.
I still see so much crap. Yeah. I'm telling you.
I still see so much crap. Extra knowledge that it's valuable. I mean, we value, yes, I value templates.
Yes, I do see. Yes, of course. My clients come to that. Our clients, Echo's clients, my clients, they come to us because they do value a good template. But the ones,
but do you see
that,
more clients?
The ones that I get from, I get clients to work on, I get templates from other clients to work on specific projects, and they're all just crap.
But I think people are getting smarter. I think they're looking, they understand that a template is not an image on a slide.
So that unless not you're in Google Slides.
Unless you're in Google Slides, exactly.
Now, oh, gosh. Okay, so this is what I wanted to say. I was going to mention earlier when you mentioned Google Slides. The conundrum comes in when the client says they want a brand new PowerPoint template and they want it to work and they want this. And then you're almost done with it. And, oh, by the way, we need it to work in Google Slides too. And then you're stuck in two environments. And then you have people working in PowerPoint for their decks. And then they're bringing it into Google Drive. Yeah. And people are opening it in Google Drive and they're messing it up and wrecking it.
And then saving it.
That's happening. Mm-hmm. That is happening.
And there's that lovely little button in Google Drive that says open in slides. And then what you don't realize is because it also saves, it's ruined it.
Yep.
And there's a whole back-end ecosystem that has just been blown away. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We've done training for clients, like series of webinars for them and how-to guides and stuff, essentially saying, don't push this button. Right. Do preview, not open. Just so it doesn't ruin it.
It's amazing how many warnings we have to put on our templates now. Yep. You know, don't do this. Do this,
and they still come back.
I don't know if we want to talk about features though, but there's a new one which might help, which is going to help you and Julie and Echo, right? The whole lock items.
No,
that's not.
It doesn't.
No,
doesn't
going to help
work
you
with template stuff.
It works on slide level, not master level.
Yeah, you
know, one of my first disappointments.
I told Julie and Sandy, we have a call every couple of weeks where we just do coffee clatch and we bitch about clients and talk about business and, you know, this, that, and the other. Our secret's out. Sorry. But I think I told you guys during that call, I was like, this lock feature, I know I told at least one of them. I was like, this lock feature, this is not going to work for templates. I know it's not. It's going to lock things down so that when you're editing, you don't move them around and all that, which is super useful and awesome for a lot of people. But it is not what we've been asking for as far as locking down templates and what our clients have been asking for. Because like personally, I don't want to lock down templates. But I know that clients really, you know, enterprise customers would really like to lock down brand elements and certain things like that. And so I had really high hopes when they talked about the locking and
nope.
Not so much, but it is super useful while you're just like creating your slides. So.
Is it closer to being fixable for it?
Mm-mm. It doesn't work with the placeholders.
No, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work with placeholders.
Yeah,
it doesn't lock them on the master side and in the master view.
Mm-hmm. I think what happens is like designer, you know, when designer throws a slide at you and you put it in your deck, you can't select anything. It's because there's a locking attribute that's been added. Well, most things, yeah. But anyway, there's a locking attribute that's been added in the XML. Well, you could add that to like placeholders and things like that. But when you create a slide, it's basically creating a new object that has all those attributes from that placeholder that's on your slide master, but it's creating a new object. So if you put the lock on that placeholder, it doesn't transfer to that new object. It's like something has to exist before you can put that lock attribute onto it, which is
that's a great way to describe that, Echo.
Yeah.
I'm still writing that down.
Okay. Well,
something has to
exist.
That's
why there's a lot of things in the XML like that. And that's, I think, what the problem with the first level bullets is. Like, if you take the first level bullet off, you lose all the bulletness on your second, third, fourth level. And that's because the bullet has to exist before it can be in there. So, like, if you take the bullet off, it loses off its bulletness. Because it doesn't exist.
Bulletness. Adding it to Webster's next year.
adding yeah, to my list mm-hmm. of
neologism.
There you go. But yeah, that's what's going on, I think. And so I think that's why the lock doesn't work. That's my gut instinct on it. I don't really know for sure, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Huh. I don't know if it'll ever be fixed. I think it's one of those things that would require a file format update, and they're really, really reticent to do that. Or what's the word? That's not the right word, is it? They're very, very hesitant to do that file format changes. So Rick could probably tell me why. I don't know why.
I could, but it's boring. Yeah.
But I know you know. So yeah, I just know that they don't like to do it.
Okay, folks, we've got to wrap up here. I don't actually have a set close. I was just going to let us all say goodbye at some point because it's just cool to be able to talk to everybody. And, you know, I kind of miss that during this mm-hmm. summit, too. It's just totally. The ability to sit and chat and echo your idea or whoever just said it. You know, just a room to hang out in and just talk would have been stellar. So this is like the most conversational conversation we've had. I tried.
It was
okay.
Hard.
Let me get my AltSpace. AltSpace is awesome. I have my own account. I've utilized it. It doesn't use the same email address and identity as my Microsoft login. So therefore, there was a disconnect, and I don't think they ever got it resolved. So I just gave up after a while. I was like, you know what? This has got enough people. I've been in it.
I was wondering where you went, Troy.
I was disappointed.
Yeah, but I was wondering where you were. I did get to have cocktails in.
Oh
yeah, we had a blast.
Yeah. I wanted to. It just didn't. And they said they were processing things, and you know, after 20 minutes, I kind of gave up. But to reiterate, I've been up since 3 a.m. Mm. because of East Coast company events going on. We've had events every day overlapping, so I just decided it was time for me to step away.
Yeah,
so I missed it. So people that don't know, Microsoft owns
AltSpace.
What's the official AltSpace VR? Mm-hmm. Is that the That's the full name, right? AltSpace VR is the company.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or the division or whatever. Yeah, Microsoft actually owns it, and it's pretty darn cool.
Hey, Troy.
You have to be 13 to create an account, and my son was so disappointed.
Oh, how old is he? 11?
He's, oh gosh, he turned 11.
My niece is 11. I think they would get along, to be honest. Oh, no, he's a good kid. I met him.
Yeah, he's a sweetheart.
Okay, well, we didn't have a discussion room, but we got to have this time together, yes. So thank you. Nolan, Sandy, any last comments from you all before we close it down today?
I love you guys.
Oh, thank
so
you.
Fun. It makes me so miss our time together.
I know. I miss y'all.
Next year in Jerusalem.
Got it.
that's a Passover joke.
Yeah. Okay. I love it. I love it.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Rick. Thanks, Julie. Thanks, Echo. Thanks, Richard, Nolan, Sandy, and myself. We've all had an awesome, awesome time. We've had a great, great time talking with Microsoft and just being able to listen in. And they have a lot to share. There is so many cool things that we will be talking about for the next year as these things roll out. So I'm really encouraged and excited about things. Business is not slowing down. People still need presentation work. Presentations still suck by people. And there's just, you know, bad presenting skills out there. There's lots of things that we could all pick up on. So, hey, if we could all just say goodbye as a big group.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for another great presentation conversation. Episode show notes are available at the Presentation Podcast website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. Also through the website, contact the show host with episode suggestions, questions, or comments. We want other designers to join us, and you can help. Please leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc., and new episodes release on the first and third Tuesday of each month.